Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Chinese GDP growth tops analyst expectations even as lockdowns present future challenges. Plus, concerns of a global debt crisis greet IMF and World Bank leaders as they meet this week.
Interest rates are rising around the world, and that is affecting borrowing costs. The number of countries that are facing trouble now is growing very quickly.
And e-commerce drops as shoppers return to stores. It's Monday, April 18th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Six people have been killed and several injured in Russian missile strikes on the western Ukrainian city of Lviv today, local Ukrainian authorities say. It's a sign that Russia's long-range weapons remain a threat to areas far from the conflict's eastern front lines. Russia's defense ministry said that its air-based missiles struck 16 targets in Ukraine, but it didn't mention Lviv as among the locations targeted. Meanwhile, the last Ukrainian troops in the besieged city of Mariupol have rejected a Russian ultimatum to surrender. Russian forces are close to capturing the strategic port after weeks of heavy bombardment that's reduced much of the city to rubble. China's economy grew by 4.8% in the first quarter, a faster pace than the 4% expansion recorded in the final 3 months of last year and topping expectations by analysts polled by the Wall Street Journal. That growth comes despite the COVID-19 lockdowns that have closed factories and kept tens of millions confined to their homes. However, Journal reporter Dave Sebastian says China's continued pursuit of its zero-tolerance strategy towards COVID-19 could pose challenges going forward.
So, as the Journal has reported, economists say that the official GDP data overstates the strength of China's economy. In Shanghai, the restrictions there have started to ease, but public health measures are starting to tighten up elsewhere in China. This illustrates the difficulty of containing the fast-spreading Omicron variant and the risk of sporadic lockdowns that could dampen economic activity throughout the year.
In Shanghai, authorities have now reported 3 COVID-19 deaths. They are the first to be reported in China's financial capital since a widespread outbreak there last month prompted a citywide lockdown. The CEO of electric vehicle maker Rivian, RJ Scaringe, is warning that the auto industry could soon face a looming EV battery shortage, challenging an industry hoping to sell tens of millions of vehicles in the coming years. In March, Rivian said it was sharply curtailing factory output this year, cutting its production forecast to 25,000 vehicles, about half of what it could have built if it weren't for constraints on sourcing parts and materials. And we are exclusively reporting that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is examining reports from more than 100 consumers who told the agency that they got sick after eating Lucky Charms cereal recently. An FDA spokeswoman said they are reviewing and investigating those reports. General Mills, the maker of Lucky Charms, said it is working with the FDA on the matter and that it conducted a thorough internal investigation that found no evidence of illnesses linked to the consumption of the product. General Mills and the FDA haven't issued a recall of the cereal. E-commerce boomed at the start of the pandemic as shoppers steered clear of brick-and-mortar stores and retailers accelerated investment in their online storefronts. But 2 years on, retailers see signs that shoppers want back in on real-world shopping, begging the question, have we hit peak e-commerce? WSJ reporter Peter Rudiger has been looking at the numbers, and he joins us now with the latest. Hey, Peter.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing terrific, thanks. I can personally relate to this desire to want to be back out in society and doing my shopping there, but what is the data actually telling us about where people are doing their shopping in April of 2022?
Well, it's not just you. Many people are in the same boat. So we looked at a couple different data points to try to answer this question. The first is a survey from MasterCard, the credit card network. They do one on retail sales every month. And March was the first month that e-commerce sales declined from a year earlier and in-store sales rose. It's actually the first time it happened in almost 9 years. So we had 11% jump in in-store sales and a 3% decline in e-commerce sales in March. Another data point we looked at is the Census Bureau in the United States. They do this quarterly survey of what percentage of retail sales happen online. And as you'd expect, in the second quarter of 2020, when we were all locked down and had to stay at home, that jumped to an all-time high of around 15%, 4 percentage point jump in just a quarter. Since then, it's kind of ticked down, and we're now under 13%. And what's kind of notable about that is if you just look at the trend line of where we were before the pandemic, that's kind of where we would have been anyway. So it kind of suggests that this e-commerce boost that retail sales got during the pandemic wasn't as long lasting as many people may have predicted in March or April of 2020.
So where is this leaving both online and brick and mortar retailers?
So you had both of those, both the online specialists and the brick and mortar, have huge growth in e-commerce numbers in 2020 and 2022. You know, Dick's Sporting Goods, for instance, this most recent quarter, they reported a rise in in-store sales, decline in e-commerce volume. Amazon's revenue declined in its online segment for the first time in the fourth quarter, I think, since 2016. So it's just retailer after retailer that is reporting kind of the same trend. I think what a lot of people are learning is that if you already know what you want to buy, the internet is a great place to go and find it and buy it. But if you want to discover new products, there still really isn't anything like going into a store, looking around, touching and feeling something. So yes, it is more expensive to go from just online to online plus in-store, but you just got to go where the people are, and most sales still are happening offline.
Is the expectation that this latest flourishing of brick and mortar is here to stay, or is this possibly just a sort of last gasp, if you will, for traditional retail?
I think no one wants to answer that question because they don't know totally what's going to happen with the pandemic, with inflation, with consumer preferences. I think there was a lot of exuberance at the start of the pandemic that this was going to be a permanent shift. Once people order their groceries online and discover they're not getting the wilted lettuce, maybe they'll do that after the pandemic. But we haven't seen that happen across the board. And we'll just have to see where the macroeconomic environment goes, just because if you want to shop for stuff online, you can price compare a little easier than if you're going to a bunch of different stores. So if inflation continues and customers are more kind of price conscious, that could be another boost for online sales going forward.
That was WSJ reporter Peter Rudiger joining us from New York. Peter, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, countries around the developing world are increasingly struggling to pay their debts, leading to concerns about a possible debt crisis that could weaken the global economic recovery. We'll hear how the IMF and World Bank are responding to those fears after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
On top of supply chain issues, inflation, and the continuing costs of responding to the pandemic, a new economic risk is looming as members of the IMF and World Bank kick off their spring meetings today. It's the possibility of a global debt crisis unfolding across the developing world. WSJ reporter Yuka Hayashi covers trade and the international economy for us, and she's here to share the latest on this risk. Hi, Yuka. Thank you for being with us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Could you just walk us through the fiscal challenge that some countries are starting to find themselves in at present and how serious this situation really is?
So a number of low and middle income countries are getting into pretty serious financial situations. And they're facing a number of issues. So let's look back over the past decade or so. Interest rates around the world were so low that a number of these less developed countries were able to get into the market and borrow a lot of money. So even before the pandemic or the war in Ukraine started, these countries were facing an extremely high levels of debt. Then COVID came and a lot of governments had to spend a lot of money to help their people. And in order to do that, they had to borrow more money. Then the war in Ukraine started and prices of food and prices of energy, gasoline, are all like soaring. So a lot of these countries face very large import bills now. On top of that, interest rates are rising around the world, and that is affecting the borrowing costs of these countries. So now they are faced with huge debts, and their debt payment costs are rising because of higher interest rates. So a number of countries are in a situation where they face difficulty making repayments, and they've started reaching out to the IMF, the World Bank, for help.
And how widespread is this? Could you spotlight for us some of the countries that are feeling this pinch and what they're doing about it?
So the number of countries that's already in trouble is not that large, but it's increasing very rapidly. So the countries that are affected the most are countries like Egypt, Tunisia. They face significant increases in import prices of food. Then we have countries in Asia, Sri Lanka, Pakistan. In Latin America, Argentina just renegotiated a huge debt deal, but they also face extremely high inflation. So those are the countries that are in immediate danger.
So the IMF and World Bank are meeting this week. What is being asked of them in particular in response to these fiscal challenges? And what is the chance they possess the tools or the willingness, I suppose, to actually step in to help?
So for the IMF and World Bank, one of the most important tasks this time is to improve the system they have to help developing countries in debt trouble resolve their debt issues. They do have a system. During the pandemic, the countries allowed dozens of developing countries to suspend their debt payment temporarily, but that system has now expired. So they have a new system in place, but it still hasn't started functioning. So they have to make sure that this system functions.
And Yuka, with investors and countries extending loans to other countries here, are these DC-based financial institutions even really the ones that hold the cards in this situation?
These institutions, the IMF, the World Bank, are going to play a critical role in sort of coordinating among the countries that are creditors to these developing countries. And that challenge is greater now because a number of newer and less experienced creditors went into lending to developing countries over the past decade or so. And they include investors like pension funds, private equity funds, commodity funds, but also countries like China, Saudi Arabia. They really increased lending and they are now big creditors. So the IMF, the World Bank have this big task of forging agreement between all these creditors.
And finally, Yuka, what is the outlook here going forward? Is there a risk that what we're seeing could actually spiral into a full-on global debt crisis?
So the IMF and World Bank are not projecting a global financial crisis resulting from these debt problems at emerging countries. But the number of countries that are facing trouble now is growing very quickly, with the situation in Ukraine really exacerbating the situation. So economists are all watching very closely. One of the economists that we quoted in the story was Ken Rogoff from Harvard. And he said that we're going to see defaults. We're going to see crises. After seeing all the shocks like we have seen, anything is possible. And he says that the only thing that's keeping a lot more countries from getting into trouble is the interest rates that's still remaining low. But that is changing very quickly.
That was WSJ reporter Yuka Hayashi, who covers trade and the international economy for us. Yuka, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, when is reaching out to say hi controversial? Well, an international group of scientists is finding out after floating the idea of sending an updated message of friendship out into the cosmos in the hopes of communicating with intelligent alien life. While a previous greeting was beamed out in 1974, the new one includes added details such as an updated cosmic roadmap to Earth's location. WSJ science reporter Eileen Woodward says some worry that's a little too much information.
There is an overwhelming concern that any intelligent alien civilization may not be friendly. They are very likely technologically advanced, and it's quite possible that they might be looking to conquer and colonize whatever planets they can reach. That's what renowned physicist Stephen Hawking said in 2010. That it's impossible to know whether intelligent aliens, if they exist, would be benign or hostile.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.